Can fatherhood be a spiritual path? Folks, welcome back to the Uncivilized Podcast. My name is Trevor Boehm. I'll be your host. I'm the author of the books Today I Rise and Man Uncivilized, and the founders of the Uncivilized Movement and the Uncivilized Nation. And you are listening to the official podcast of the Uncivilized Movement. If you're new here or you haven't been here for a while, our mission is to end the suffering in men and end the suffering caused by men by creating a kick-ass movement of extraordinary gentlemen who express their masculinity through both the primal and the divine. These are guys who can cut down a tree, change a tire, and aren't afraid of their damn feelings. And today we brought in Dan Doty to speak specifically about fatherhood and to speak to the fathers. But he's also just going to talk about men. He's going to talk about men, and he's going to talk to men. Dan has been a wilderness therapist for a number of years of his life. He started and run an extraordinary men's group called Everyman, then stepped away from it. He was the executive producer or something to do with Meat Eaters. You know, that show with Steve Rinella. He's also been on Joe Rogan's podcast a couple times. I think Dan is our second Joe Rogan borrow. We also had Valentine Thomas. She was a Joe Rogan guest. But he's going to talk about the power of being a man, the power of being in nature, and some really solid ideas for men who are our fathers or who plan to be fathers. But yet, with every one of our episodes, you don't have to be a father to gain something from this. You don't have to know a father. You don't even have to be a man, because you're going to hear some really concrete points from Dan on what it takes to be an extraordinary human, man or otherwise, but man specifically, about the power of nature, power of generosity and integrity, and really walking fatherhood, the ups and downs, the trials, the tribulations, all of it, as a spiritual path. What a great frame for that, huh? So dive in, grab a notebook if you want to. This is going to be it is an awesome conversation. But before we get to Dan, if you would do me one quick favor, just hit pause wherever you are, especially if you're not new here, and go leave us a review. Hit Amazon, Spotify, wherever you're listening to this, or please do this at the end of the episode if you get something out of it, which I know you will. Our little podcast here has grown extraordinarily. It was an idea 3 years ago, and now it's we have over 350,000 downloads, which is wild. And we have that because of people like you. People who are willing to leave us a review, people who are willing to share an episode, people who are willing to DM me on Instagram, wherever you can find me, and tell me about the episode or share it there. So please keep doing that. Please help us grow it. Our goal is to get to 500,000 downloads by the end of the year. It's a big goal, but we like big goals at Uncivilized Inc. And again, I can't do it without you. So I love you. Without further ado, Dan Doty. Dan Doty, welcome to the Uncivilized Podcast. This is a pleasure and a long time coming, man. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, excited to be here, man. I've been looking forward to chatting with you for, I don't know how long it is, at least a year, probably.
It's been at least a year.
Well, more than that. Yeah.
For any of my audience who may not know who you are, what you do in the world, would you mind giving us kind of your quick and dirty elevator pitch?
Yeah, I mean, the things people know me for, I was the director producer of a show called Meat Eater for a long time. And as part of that, had a few appearances on the Joe Rogan Experience and kind of lived that life. After that, I was the founder of Everyman, just a men's work organization that's had, you know, some time in the sunshine for sure. And I left that a couple of years ago and now to pursue my own thing, my own world. And yeah, I'm a dad of three kids. I'm an outdoorsman. I'm a wilderness guide. I'm a long-term meditator and meditation teacher. And yeah, most of my life has been oriented around supporting men. That's my deal.
Dan, I think you were into this before it was cool. It sounds like the wave that I caught on was.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think so. I mean, actually, I'm curious because I've heard you talk about it a little bit. So I first got into men's work. Actually, the first thing, it wasn't men's work, but I was a wilderness therapy guide in my early 20s. And so I ran groups in the wilderness of men, of boys, of men and dads for like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of days. You know, this would be back in the early 2000s, right? So I had this like deep sort of, training and steeping in men's work type shit. Mm-hmm. But my first actual men's group was in New York City in 2008, 2009, something like that was when I stumbled into my first experience of men's work, and really, you know, really caught fire with it really immediately, honestly. Yeah. So it's been, you know, but it, I mean, even as you asked that, though, there was a whole layer. I mean, there's many layers before and little fires that burned, but I came into a group that was a David Data oriented group that had been together for 14 fucking years when I started.
Whoa.
So, you know, yeah, there's, I guess, nuance to that. But I think this most recent wave, yeah, I've been into it. I've been into it before.
Awesome. Do you know Michael Gay? You know that name?
No, I don't know. I don't know that I do.
He's a co-teacher of mine and a therapist, and his start was wilderness therapy.
Oh, cool.
And so much of what he does and brings talks about, like, I think he wants to say if he could get every man on the planet in the wilderness for a month, we'd solve 99% of our problems. Just having them have to deal with the reality. Yeah. So it's such an interesting background. How did that come about for you as a profession, as an idea, as a way to express yourself?
Total fucking dumb luck is the real answer. I mean, that's partly true, right? So I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in North Dakota, Minnesota, and I grew up in really closed down culture, family and community culture. Nobody had any, I mean, it's just like fucking tight. Like we're in little fucking winter cocoons up in North Dakota. And my first really breaking out as a human was the first wilderness trip I ever went on, which was with my cousin's church group in the Boundary Waters when I was like 13 and really fucking awkward. Yeah. But I loved it, right? I found something, you know? And so what I did with that is I started, like, my summer jobs tended to be oriented in that direction, right? So I was like a naturalist for the Forest Service. I was like a hiking guide and things like this. But then when I graduated college, I was actually living in Panama with a girlfriend writing a novel and just kind of doing the kind of fuck off type thing. And I needed money. And my girlfriend and I at the time wanted to move to Utah where her family was from. And I went on Craigslist. And I saw this ad for a wilderness therapy guide. I didn't know what it was, like literally just like looking at a different dimension, didn't know what the fuck it was. And like clicked it. I was like, holy shit, this is so cool. And yeah, a month later I was out in the mountains of Utah, you know, doing it, actually puking the first day. And there was wild onions all over that just smelled so bad. And I like, just puking my guts out.
Where was this in Utah?
So there's a mountain range just south and west of Salt Lake and Provo, right? So if anybody knows Utah, you're headed south from Salt Lake and Provo, it would be on your west on the right as you're headed south. It's just this like small brown range of mountains. And there was a really cool outfit that ran therapeutic programming out in there.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm a graduate of Boulder Outdoor Survival School there.
Yeah. So north of there. But
right on. Yeah. Awesome stuff. What are some lessons that you say... Like when we go back to the original statement, like, I wish I could take every man into the woods for a month. What happens in the wilderness, especially for and to men, that changes us?
I mean, the it just breaks things into really simple parts, right? So your own internal experience, you can't ignore it. I think one of the most important things is it's a force function to regulate yourself on the most basic levels. So food, hydration, sleep, sun protection. That's kind of like the first layer, right? You can't not pay attention to how you are. And I think really learning those lessons, like actually all the way through, is just a wildly valuable skill set that pertains to every moment of your life, right? The next layer would be especially in the context in which I guided, is the human connection element. You fucking need each other. You really need to be able to vibe and connect and communicate. And it brings you, I mean, from my perspective, place our human nature comes out, the need and the support and the strength that comes from actually being connected, right? So I think it's an incredible environment to learn to be supportive and communicative and connected with others, right? And then there's the big mystery shit too, right? Like there's, you know, I was fortunate. I could spend a lot of days in a lot of places and it's fun, you know. I think from a elemental, and I don't mean that necessarily in a woo-woo way, but I mean literally sleeping on the fucking ground, you know, heaven. There is something about it seems to be a practical way that us humans can have a sense of a higher power or something bigger than us, right? Because it's not out there, it's not different. It's you kind of get this innate sense of being a part of this much wilder thing. And so the sort of capacity for ego to crack and sort of see yourself in a different alignment with everything else just kind of happens, man.
I agree. I remember feeling like I am nature. Mm-hmm. Nature isn't something I need to go drive 45 minutes to go sit in and observe. Living in the woods, I became part of nature and realized, wow, this is, whatever the famous quote of like civilization's only 3 days deep. I'm like, wow, yeah. this is what's really going on. And yeah. My little suburban house in Mercedes is not real. This is what's real. It's been here long before my ass has gotten here and will be here long after. And that's not an unsettling feeling, which I think for a lot of men would feel that it is. But it actually feels like reconnecting to the truth. So I feel you on that one. Did you go right? Go ahead, please.
I would love to add one more little thing there. It's something I've been kind of tripping out about lately. And it's maybe like all of those things I named, like lumped into one place. I feel like it allows for the instinctual level of intelligence to come online, which is something that I think a lot of men's work and a lot of things are driving at in some way, but it seems to make sense out there, right? That embodied.
Tease that out a little more?
Yeah, that sort of embodied somatic. I mean, we have such wild intelligence beyond, you know, our normal conceptual understanding of things, right? And so, you know, I think it comes from it's just that part that just knows and can feel through decisions quickly and efficiently and powerfully. It's right. Am I hungry? Yes. Do I want to have children? No. Do I want to fucking, you know, go to Brazil? Yes. It's that sort of that super muscle that allows for navigating the being alive in a really like direct way.
Wow, it's a beautiful way to say it. And how disconnected are we, especially as men now, where so many guys are, you know, I've been mulling over this decision for 6 months. And it's like, you hate your job, quit it. You literally called me and said, I feel like I'm driving to prison every day to go to work. And here you are pontificating if you should keep your job because you have a 401k. So yeah, it does feel like we're really disconnected from that. Did you go right from that to Meat Eater?
No, so I wanted a new professional challenge, and I wanted a higher degree also. So I became a New York City teaching fellow, and I taught the Bronx for a couple of years.
Wow!
And I got my master's, and it was one of the biggest challenges I've ever had, one of the most meaningful and fulfilling things I've ever done, and it fucking broke me. It like completely. Flattened me. So
broke you because,
you know, it was a lot of things. It was straight burnout was one part of it, right? I mean, it was a very stressful environment, and then I'd get off of work in the school and take the train downtown and do class every night, and so it was a lot. Yeah. Honestly, the true breakdown was just that I didn't have at that time I was still quite repressed, and I didn't have ways to manage stress and deal with emotions. And a lot of it had to do with a relationship at that time that frankly, I just didn't have the courage to get out of. And so I found myself actually cheating on my girlfriend. And I'm like this, like at this point thinking I'm this very honest, straightforward dude, and I'm doing all this shit I can't believe. Mm. And it just like came to a head, and I just imploded. I just totally imploded.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. So you were teaching. How does that lead to being a producer on one of the most kick-ass TV shows I think there is, by the way?
Yeah, so in that implosion, I found my first men's group, my first therapist, my meditation teacher, and all of the things to change. And it was a dude in my first men's group that was a director at ZPZ, which is the company that did Bourdain's work and made Meat Eater. And okay. So they sold a new show, and they needed somebody to take care of the crew in the wilderness. It's like, hey dude, you wanna come along, and that kind of flipped into this, you know, 5-ish year career that just kind of ramped up through and produced and directed most of the early seasons of Meat Eater and became an executive producer. And that was a wild ride.
Do you feel the effect of that show? Like, I remember I was living in Brooklyn when I first found it, and I'm pretty sure it's one of the reasons I moved to Colorado. Not directly, not like, hey, wow, this it's featured in Colorado and Colorado looks beautiful. It just went, God, there's more. I can't deal with a 6-foot by 6-foot square of grass and 15 people being like, look, there's a park. It just didn't fit when I'd go home and watch Steve Rinella, you know, stalking something for 3 days and be like, man, that's real life. This isn't real life. Do you feel the effect of that show and the effect that you had on men specifically?
Oh, fucking totally, man. And you know, both on me and everybody. I mean, it's I'm so proud of it. I've had a schism and I'm not really connected with them, unfortunately, anymore. But I'm so proud of every part of that, right? And the evolution, being a part of the evolution of that, like, deeply masculine, deeply ancient, you know, practice or part of humanity, and, you know, and sort of offering it in a way that really makes sense, that kind of brings together, you know, modern ethics and modern knowledge and understanding. And yeah, man, I mean, it was an incredible thing, and I'm proud of every aspect of it. And, you know, everywhere I go, like, you know, men all over the country and the world get it, you know, and people, it's one of those things that people just, you know, you could imagine something like that being contentious or I don't know, even controversial, but it's just, you get much of that. People just got it. They're like, wow, this is fucking great, you know?
Yeah, I think the way it was positioned of, there was so much respect interwoven, and it wasn't bypassy ceremonial respect. It was, wow, here's a real dude who kind of looks like me, sounds like me, but what he's saying is profound and what he's saying feels really true. So well done to everybody on the show and yourself particularly for taking a message that I think was really needed. Especially, I mean, we could talk for 2 hours on how I can walk through a supermarket and unless you're in the outer aisles, you're eating poison. And people don't want to think that and don't want to talk about that. But man, it is true as true can be. So I think that show specifically shifted a lot of the tide around even nutrition that you guys may not realize, especially for men.
No, I think you're right. You know, I guess to share a little perspective on that too. You know, we haven't spoken before this conversation, but, you know, in sort of tracking your work and your messaging, and so there's a similarity there, and it's something I really admire, and I feel like there's a note that really resonates for me. And it is that it is the not needing to sort of let go of, it's not even necessarily masculine, right? Or hunting or whatever these, you know, potentially controversial elements of our truth are, but being able to, first of all, live, but also express and articulate clearly the beauty and the humanity within it, right? And alongside of it. So anyway, that was a kind of a poorly worded appreciation of you. And what you're saying about Meat Eater, I see in what you do.
Thank you.
There's a similar tonality about it, right? Like, thank you.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Dan, can we switch gears and talk about fatherhood? Mm-hmm. I think I know that's a big topic that you're working with and something you have a lot of experience with, and I don't. But I would love if you would speak to what are some of the challenges you're seeing? And I'll preface this by saying I interviewed a man like 2 or 3 weeks ago named Noah Goldstein, and we talked specifically about postpartum depression in men and how that's not really a discussion. It's postpartum depression in women, which is completely valid and is a real thing. Yet I've known a number of fathers who for the first 2 years of their children's birth or after their children's birth have flip-flopped from complete elation to crushing stress to depression because they can't breastfeed and the kid doesn't seem to be very interested in them. And their wife is on a different path, per se than being a wife at the moment, which is natural. So if we could take it even from even back that far, or whatever you're seeing in any part of the spectrum of fatherhood, what are some of the challenges men are facing in that realm right now?
Well, I would say, and this is just from a generic culture, general mainstream cultural point of view, that the status right now for fathers is a pretty untenable situation. It's really not a workable situation. It's an almost impossible situation, I would say.
Say more.
I guess depending on what your expectations are, right? And at what level you want to live, in a sense, and at what capacity you want to live. Because historically speaking, throughout human history, the average amount of adults to child ratio in human homes was 2-to-1 or 3-to-1, meaning there was 2 adults for every child or 3 adults for every child. Mm-hmm. And this is how humans raise little ones. And so just from a numbers game to start with, the way that our current society sets parents up is actually just like we're way behind the curve already, just from a logistical support perspective, right? So that's huge. That's enough on its own. But then I would say that today, the roles and expectations around fathers are shifting so firmly and quickly, I would say, in the expectation and the mandate almost to really be connected, to be part of the emotional parenting, to be part of the house, just all of the things now. It's like a very integrated expectation for dads today. And fundamentally, men don't have the experience, the training, the mentorship for any of that. So it's like stepping into a job that I think this is partially true, but becoming a parent is like stepping into the Super Bowl after having no reps at all. Like you don't ever even fucking practice. You don't have any games. You've never
thrown a football.
You just go to the Super Bowl, and the stakes are fucking high. I mean, they're more than high. And then you get in there and you realize the stakes are high, and you realize you're all fucked up and haven't done your work, and your wife's all fucked up, and everything's all fucked up. And it's gnarly. And it's not always that dark, right? So I'm giving a bit of a dramatic edge to that, but there's some truth in there. And there's truth in there even for men who are really well-developed and been sitting in men's groups forever, done therapy and all that stuff. Like I have made a practice my entire life of doing the most challenging things I can find. And it pales in comparison to the true stakes of being a dad, right? What's cool about that is that, with any challenge comes, if you face it, comes like immense fucking opportunity, right? And so I view fatherhood, and in my fatherhood work, we flip it and we say, okay, either kids are on their way or kids are here. I am where I am. It's fucking time. It's go time, right? It's fucking go time. And I think there's a natural organic rite of passage and growth trajectory that fatherhood brings without any other work, right? Like just doing it over time, there's this necessity to, first of all, let your ego fit more accurately into the whole puzzle and open your, like fatherhood just blows your heart right open and you're like, oh, that's what it means like, that's what actually means to love somebody, right? That's what it means like to be loved, right? And it's just, there's these fundamental, like deep down experiences. And some of it, you kind of naturally step into it, right? But I see with it, it's just a highly leverageable period of a man's life, right? So if you get into that, and you even just get a little bit of sort of frame and support. And so I guess just to cap that off for myself, fatherhood has a whole life of spiritual sort of exploration now makes sense. It all makes sense to me in the context of the human reality of like having your genetics get passed on. It just makes more sense, right? And I'm kind of obsessed with it. It's like I fucking love it.
It sounds like it. All right, folks, hope you're loving this conversation with Dan. If you do not have New Year's plans, I would love to have you, man or woman or anything in between, come down to the Dominican Republic and join myself, Leela Dilla, and Jeremy Goldberg for 7 days of an extraordinary workshop called The Awakening, where we are awakening the archetypes of the mystic, the warrior, and the poet in everybody who comes. I won't go into it here. It's going to be epic. We've done this a number of times. Extremely incredible results. So please check out manuncivilized.com/the-awakening. Again, manuncivilized.com/the-awakening. Okay, back to Dan. Dan, can we go back to what are the new requirements and what are some of the necessary skills that a guy listening to this may be like, wait a minute. I kind of feel that there's this thing that I'm being asked to do. What are the requirements and what are the skills? And then if we could get into perhaps after, how are those developed?
Yeah, so requirements, I'll just sort of riff on that. To be a very supportive full partner, birth partner, marriage partner, relationship partner, right? That's, and I think that those requirements have, or maybe are always in flux or are evolving or changing, right? Like, there's plenty of relationships that are sort of like the classic, I'm the fucking man and, you know, she's the woman and all that. But that, you know, in most of my circles, it's not simple, right? It's not cut and dry. And so I think that brings about requirements of basic emotional capacity, right? Basic connection capacity, basic, you know, communicative capacity in knowing what you feel and knowing what you want and knowing what's needed. Mm-hmm. Requirements of being able to take action and be accountable and take responsibility become utterly, utterly, real and visceral and very important. And then when it comes to the actual fathering part, I think the requirements are to open your fucking heart, you know, to give and to receive love. And actually, if I had to nail down one, the biggest, and it's probably on the more less practical side or seemingly practical, is that capacity to give and receive love through the body, through the voice, through the eyes, through your decisions, right? Through how you do all that. Yeah. And so that's some of the requirements, but then the other requirements remain, which would be, you know, providing for your family, obviously depending on your situation, but providing, doing well at work, protecting, whatever protection means these days. I think a lot of times protection these days more often than not means protection from our own demons and from our own traumas and issues. That seems to be the first layer of protection. Most of the people I work with aren't getting fucked with. They're not in physical danger from other people, generally speaking.
Right.
But our own unaddressed shit is the stuff that we literally watch our children take on, absorb, and that's a gnarly place to be.
Yeah, to say there's probably more alcoholism and domestic violence than there are random people breaking into homes in the middle of the night to rob families. So you're right. It is
on an exponential level, I would imagine.
Yeah. Before we transition to a separate piece, I know this is going to be a bitch of a question. How does the guy who's listening to this, who just heard, I have to give and receive love. Bro, I'm doing that. I go to work every day. I'm not a fuck up. I don't drink. I don't beat my wife. I don't yell at my kids. What else is there? And how do I develop this capacity or skill? I'm kind of feeding it. Like, how does that guy, one, how do we get him to recognize that that's awesome? First of all, good for you. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the requirements in the 60s and 70s. But now we're at a very different place where there's an emotional ask of men. And so this guy's going, I don't know what to do. I listened to these two guys on a podcast and they say I need to give and receive love. But like, where's the manual? What are the three steps? How do I watch the YouTube video? Like, what do I do here? What does he do?
Yeah, I mean, well, here's a cluster of ideas. And they're all going to involve surrendering somehow, one way or another, right? You could look toward heroic doses of, your favorite psychedelic substance. I think that can be a helpful thing. you know, good men's work. I mean, I would just, you know, I'm a fan, right? Good men's work in general, I think is, you know, kind of a blanket statement, right? I think that find something that works for you and try it. I am a huge fan of, you know, therapy and just general the inner work necessary. And so I don't know if this guy's doing that yet or not, but you know, if you're in a neutral or positive place, I think that's the best time to start therapy. I think it's helpful to start that from a place of strength. You know, and the last one, it's probably not the last one, but the only one that I can think about right now is, I don't know, like where does this guy get curious about things beyond the conventional, right? Like, where is there any curious about something different or something other? And, you know, maybe that's just fucking aliens or something. So yeah, maybe don't just do YouTube. Maybe go to one of the fucking weirdos that goes and climbs mountains and look, like just go do something outside of the norm and see what happens. You know, I mean, my world is, you know, basically centered around Vajrayana Buddhist practice. And so most of my life, I guess what I'm actually pointing to here are questions of meaning, and not questions of meaning through a purely intellectual sort of trying to learn about way, but an experiential approach to the deep questions of life. Ooh, that's what I would say.
Yeah, beautiful. And I imagine that's intimidating as shit to a lot of guys.
Good.
Yeah.
Should be.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's fucking uncomfortable. It should be.
And it's a path, but you're not going to spend 45 minutes this weekend doing that and be like, cool, check the existential crisis box, or like figured out the God box, or figured out purpose box. Yeah. Like, brother, this is a lifetime path that you're going to be walking, but the most rewarding one that you'll be walking. Dan, let me
back up, because I guess I don't know this dude, obviously, but let's just say he's here. First, I'd probably say, if it's cool, then don't do anything, right? Like just fucking enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. If you're actually enjoying your life, if you feel fulfilled enough, fucking chill and do your thing, man. Like I don't think that there's a implication here that everybody needs to, you know, to go different. But the last thing I'll say about it would be, and I don't really know how to talk about this, but when I look back with all the men that I've worked with and all the things, like, there just seems to be a way where men choose or stumble into or get pushed into or luck into some sense of, I don't know, like coming alive, like actually coming alive, right? And being participating in this life in a more full it's like fucking without a condom, right? Like if you've only worn condoms your entire life, and then you finally take that fucker off, it's like that. You know, it's just like that electric life
thing. I mean, it's gonna take all my strength not to make "Fucking Without a Condom" with Dan Doty the title of this podcast.
get some views.
Dan, can we talk specifically about the transition we're in of the last 2-3 years? And how that specifically, not what did COVID and what did the pandemic do to fathers and fatherhood, what has the transition out of it opened as an opportunity for fatherhood? And what are some of the roadblocks that you're seeing? Because I feel like a lot of people were in survival mode, and rightly so, where they're working from home. Suddenly the kids aren't going to school. I watched a couple people I know with toddlers try to have homeschool on the iPad. And was like, I lasted about 3.5 seconds before I was like, hey, I got to go for a long walk in the woods and calm myself down. But they're not in that acute stage anymore. But it doesn't feel like there's been repair, healing, whatever about the acute stage. So can you talk about the transition that we're in and fatherhood specifically?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. So I'll just give a local like anecdote first, right? So here I live in rural Maine intentionally, right? And small communities, tight communities, and this is a really beautiful thing to share. But honestly, my experience the last couple of years is just some really fucking good men who are really fucking good dads, just like really doing it, man. And so I, in no way do I think that that's the cultural norm or the geographical norm. Right. But I think it's worth saying, and I think that's worth just, you know, noting all the time is that, you know, I gave that dramatic sort of description earlier about how fatherhood isn't workable, which is in some cases is really true. There's truth to that. But man, dads are doing a really good job also. And I actually think that the pandemic gave a lot of dads an opportunity to be forced into that deeper connection with their kids, right? And not all easy, right? Like you said, like things got squirrely, things were like really hard. And so, you know, I guess one response to your question would be there's certainly either micro or, you know, large scale PTSD in a lot of families and parents out there right now. And I don't know the depth that runs, right? I'm not sure. I don't know. Does that require intervention in a formal way? Can we just come out, shake it off? You know, can we all just go and hike enough and shake that shit off and like get back into life a little bit?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the need for human connection, I think what's the way I see it is really interesting, right? I think the pandemic certainly heightened the general lack of human connection that a lot of men have, the loneliness, the separation, right? And it exacerbated it.
Right.
I don't know that there's been a large scale mobilized response to that. You know, like every man, that was certainly one sort of attempt or crack at that, just like, hey dude, get the fuck together, like it's just easier, trust us, you know.
Yeah.
One element, but I think on the other hand, even though it exacerbated loneliness, I think it did force deeper connections within the family, right? And I know it caused a lot of divorce, it caused a lot of struggle, but in a lot of cases, a lot of men that I know, dads I've worked with, like did grow together with their children and did come out more involved fathers and more part of the family. You know, one way I like to talk about dads is that, you know, if our society and our community and our families is like a blanket or a fabric, like a lot of times, like men are actually, or dads are, they're like strings, like not woven in, like they're just like sitting outside or they're afraid in, right? And I think the pandemic was, again, a kind of a forced a lot of men to just sit the fuck down and read a book with their kids, you know? And so that's the positive. And, you know, the hard end is that, yeah, I don't know how much it's actually changed. I think the sort of disconnection men live with was pretty strong before it too, you know?
But. Yeah. I will say one of the my favorite experiences after, or sort of towards the end of the pandemic, was sitting down with a couple close friends who aren't in any of this work, men, and asking like, what was the best thing that came out of this? And one of them just saying straight up, now I know who my kids are. And it like, I just got chills and it floored me. And yeah. Like, what a gift, right? And yes, I will fully acknowledge that there are families that have gone through all kinds of challenges from abuse to severities of abuse and whatnot because of the pandemic. But I agree with you. I think a lot of men's travel schedules got stopped. A lot of men commute, the 2-hour commute each way got eliminated. And suddenly they had an opportunity to slow down and stop and feel into their kids and feel into their families. Dan, in your opinion, what makes a great father? And what are some of the ingredients, as opposed to pointing out the deficiencies or the challenges, what are some of the ingredients of a great father? And even is that a loaded term? Should we be picking something else to qualify that man with?
I mean, no, I think it's very valid. I think it's super valid. All right, so where should we start? I feel like the first thing to note is that, you know, our kids learn way more from what we do than what we say, right? And recognition of that is pretty primary here, right? So we can pretend that we're, you know, fathering and saying the right things and, you know, from our minds kind of doing things right, but we have to know that what's actually being transmitted is the decisions we make, that the tone of our, it's just who we are. And we can't get around that. You can't fucking fake that, right? It's just actually how you are. And that's what they receive. That's the primary one. So I think a really great father recognizes that and allows that to humble himself immediately, right? And allows himself to see where he really is as often as possible, and sees through all of the projections and sees the strengths and the weaknesses and the good and the bad, and doesn't evade, tries not to evade. And then with that, leans in and, allows for or goes after, just, I guess is in a constant sort of relationship with that, right? With that truth. And so, when you, when I come home and, I didn't take care of myself for the day and I'm just being a total shithead to my kids and actually I had a really great moment last weekend and I snapped at my oldest son and yelled at him, and he just looked at me in the eyes and he said, "I will not let you talk to me that way." Ooh. And I'm just like, fucking right. I just gave him a high five. I'm like, yeah, like high five, dude. Like that is like the most incredible thing that I've ever seen. And so, yeah, that's there. I think that modeling, modeling our values and modeling what we think is possible is what we can really aspire to, mm-hmm. right? That's part. Another really big part is, I think a part of the dad job or the parent job is to really try to be as intentional, get to the place where you can be really intentional about setting the conditions for your children to have, I don't know if you know an author named Stephen Jenkinson, who did the grief work.
I interviewed him yesterday.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Incredible guy.
Yeah, so in a conversation, he shared, the best thing that parents can do these days is create some level of a bubble of kindness and safety and clarity around their children. And I really think that's accurate. And so on our end, what that meant is really moving all over the country until we found the home and choosing school communities and just really being intentional, right? And placing, and there's different gradations of this, but when I first became a dad, I thought I was family first. I thought I was, placing that, but by the time the second one came around, I got smacked and really realized that, that wasn't true. And I wasn't placing my family in the priority position. And it took me, some hard knocks to really, and I'm glad, I'm grateful for it. I got it. I got the message.
Yeah. Thanks for being so honest about that.
Yeah.
Hey, can we, in the last few minutes, and this may be a bit of a offshoot angle, but I would love to hear about how meditation specifically, I'm a longtime meditator myself, how does that interweave in your worldview with fatherhood? What are some of the benefits and why should fathers meditate in your opinion, if you think they should? I think they should, and I'm not a father. I think everyone should meditate.
Yeah. So the type of meditation I practice is a somatic-based meditation. So it's meditating through and with the body first. And so meditation in my worldview is a fundamental sort of embodiment practice and realization practice. And I guess I would say I actually learned to meditate without any instruction by being in the woods and out in the deserts for so long. And then when I did my first actual meditation in New York when I was 26, I just lost it and wept a bucket of tears because I was like, oh, you mean that what I got from being out in the woods for that long, I could get in a practice in 5 minutes? This brings me to that same place. I'm like, holy fuck. Yeah. So yeah, why should dad? It's the same thing. It's a very, very well-worn path to coming alive to breaking through the constant barrage of illusions that we all have about who we are and how things work. And, you know, I've been at this a long time, but it doesn't seem to ever get a point where I feel like I don't continue to get occluded and, you know, just fucking kidding myself about everything, you know? So, yeah, I think the basic practices that I, you know, are going to be lifelong for me are a good men's group and a meditation practice and as much time outside as possible. And, you know, I don't think you have to do all necessarily, but I don't know if I'm just, I don't know what it is about how I'm wearing, but I kind of need to do it all or else I'm just fucked up.
Yeah. I feel you. Can we end by talking to the man who's heard all of this, is a father, and says, bro, I got more on my plate than I know what to do with. Like, I am literally just hanging on by a thread here.
Yeah.
Now I'm supposed to meditate. Now I'm supposed to be present. Now I'm supposed to go to therapy.
Yeah.
How do I do this? What can you say to that man?
First of all, I'd affirm it. Like, I get it. And I'm there myself. Right. And then I think, and I would affirm that it truly takes an internal, it has to be so fucking compelling, right? You either have to be in so much pain or be so like compelled. Like when I first fell into the Dharma and into this, you know, Tibetan Buddhism, like, man, like there's just, like, you couldn't get me off of that path. There's nothing that could get, like, right? And so, you know, from the problem mindset or the normal mindset of I'm fucking busy, there's no time, all like, yeah. Yeah, but like, and maybe you feel a call or the possibility that if you fucking break through that shit somehow, there's this entire new way to look at things. Mm-hmm. that you don't figure that out. It just happens, right? And maybe you can set the conditions for yourself to kind of shatter that one way of looking things that seems to be there all the time and you see what else comes, because when something else comes and it's just different and it's hard to, you can't predict it. I can't tell you what it's going to be like, but it's possible. I would just say that's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had a number of guys in my practice over the years. It's like, I'm just too busy to work out. I'm like, cool. Mm-hmm. Here's what I want you to do. First thing in the morning, before you pee, do 5 pushups. That's it. And then what do you know? 3 months later, there's 90 minutes carved out at the gym and they can't not go. Like, a bad day is now when they didn't get their workout in. And it all started with that one little bit of effort that, what do you know? You do actually have some time and energy. So I really appreciate that. And Dan, appreciate you coming in. For people who are interested in learning more about you, working with you, finding you, where are you hanging out these days? Where can we send this audience to get more of you?
Yeah, dandoty.com, dandoty. I'm on the Instagrams kind of begrudgingly, but I am. I'm on there too. Goodbye, me. And and I'm in the woods. Just go out to your local woods and you'll probably run into
me. Just walk out and start. Dan, he'll be there. Do you have any programs coming up or anything that you, any offerings that you'd love to share with the audience?
Yeah, for dads specifically. I don't know when we'll release this, but I have an evergreen audio course and it's delivered like a podcast. So that's always available.
Cool.
I have a cohort of Fatherhood Unlocked. It's an online training, 10-week training this fall.
Cool.
It's on my website. And, and I'm planning a bunch of wilderness trips for, next year, and planning a winter expedition as well. Ooh. Here in Maine. So,
and that's all for dads.
Some of them, but no, the wilderness ones are just dudes. Any dude. Okay. Yeah, just men.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you coming in. Appreciate you sharing your knowledge and also just how open you've been with the audience. I think it's so important for men to realize there are men that they look up to and those guys are actually human. So I appreciate you being so and dropping in for our audience, brother. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Cheers. This is Trevor Boehm signing off on another episode of the Uncivilized Podcast. If you enjoyed this, please give us a share, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and if you're interested in getting a hold of my book, Man Uncivilized, whether you're a man or a woman, please go to www.manuncivilized.com/the book and get reading.